The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15, or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson. I'm back. Yes, thank you very much to Charlie, who has been doing all the heavy lifting for months. We're meant to do this. We swap it weekly. That, to be fair, I am going to say this firstly. I did like 250 episodes by myself, so I've got some up my sleeve. But for the last 3 or 4 months, Charlie has the entire workload of FOFOP on his shoulders. I am back today, so it is good to be back on the show. Thank you to Charlie, thank you to Mike, thank you to everybody who's been covering for me. But I am back doing FOFOP, and joining me, very excited to have him here. He's about to tour Australia, not only with his podcast, The Dollop. I feel like this is much more professional than the way that I used to do this. My guest is staring at me, and I'm like, you know what? I'm about to do a plug. I was literally going to go into a real, like, he's about to tour Australia with his award-winning podcast, The Dollop, right around the country. Check out the dates. And, of course, he's doing some solo shows while he's here as well.
He's got very professional in the downtime.
You get to see him do some solo stand-up as well. It is, of course, from The Dollop podcast so many other things. Gareth Reynolds.
Hey, Will, it's Gareth.
Hello, mate.
Hey, from the intro. Hi, how are you?
That was too much.
No, that was great. That was great. I'm too big now. You're rusty. It's been a while for me, so, you know. We have energy. That's the difference.
Yes. In fact, we were having a conversation off air, just talking about life and such, and then it got to that point where I was like, we've just got to start recording this now. We've got the shit that we can't talk about on the podcast out of the way. Now we're just burning material. So
you're like a jazz producer who, once you start liking what you're hearing, you sort of gesture to the booth to like, hey, let's start rolling. Start rolling. I'm liking what the fellas are doing.
Well, you know what it's like. I think this is actually what podcasts need, because often the first 15 minutes of a podcast is them warming up. And then they get into the swing. So I don't know if you saw the Beatles Get Back, the documentary that Peter Jackson made, but
I'm the only person who hasn't seen it.
Okay, well,
but I know it. Social media has taught me everything. So go ahead.
You would have probably seen enough clips to understand that this was a thing. So they would often go into the studio and they would just sit around, like, playing covers, jamming. Like, you know, and if you think about that in the context of studio time these days, like, these guys are just, by the way, guys who managed to do 8 albums in 10 years or something ridiculous like that. So they were getting shit done, but their method was working. But if you were not the Beatles and you were like, yeah, we've got your studio for the day, and you all come in high as fuck on different drugs and just jam, playing old songs and like jam around for a while. But the great thing is that they'll just be jamming on something, and then suddenly they just start playing a riff and Paul starts singing and you're like, oh, fuck, that's Get Back. We just saw Get Back.
That clip of where he comes up with Get Back is so crazy. Where it's just like nothing. He's just, he fully, an egg pops out of his ass, he sits on it, and it hatches within the same amount of time. Like, he's just sitting there like, oh, like, I mean, yeah, I've seen like that on social media, and you are like, wow. I mean, he just willed Get Back.
But it's also that thing of, you can imagine in a different scenario, certainly in today's scenario, where studio time is so expensive, and you're a big band like that, you've got this studio, whatever. There must have been a producer and a manager and a record company person.
All right, Paul. All right, Paul. You've had your fun, buddy. Come on now. Come on, buddy. All right, buddy. Hey, someone pull Paul. Jesus Christ. I mean, what? He keeps saying get back. Yeah, get back in the goddamn studio, Paul. How about that for an idea, huh? Get back in the studio. You have time to write songs. This is studio time, asshole. I love the kid. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, Get Back to Work was originally the name of the song.
Get Back to Work, but it's true. I mean, I think that is so true. Even when you think about, like, stand-up now, it's like, you know, it used to be put out an hour once a year, once every 2-3 years. Then it was like once every year. Now it's like, you got clips? Like, there's no time for anything. There's just no time to actually like work on. I think about the hour I'm working on now. I'm like, what is the point? Is there a point?
Well, also, I mean, insofar as a business model is concerned. So if you think of stand up as a business model versus stand up as like a product that is worthy in and of itself, right? So so much of it is for Instagram clips or TikTok clips or whatever. That is the way that people are seeing stand up. That is the way that people are building careers. I even know my management, because, you know, they're doing their job, right? They're recognizing trends and how
Will
people
Anderson.
Are building their...
You're the Paul... You're doing Get Back.
I'm noodling around trying to discover
like you
need, Get Back.
Yeah, you should be allowed the noodle space of anyone I know.
I don't... Yeah, I mean, to the point where I do these improv shows, which are my Get Back sessions, right? Yeah. Like, that is me. Please come and indulge me to just stand on stage for like, you know, an hour, advertise an hour and a half if you're lucky, an hour 45 if you're not so lucky.
So. Two if you're drunk.
But trying to discover that wonderful thing. And I wonder how much it changes the way that people think about, you know, how they construct something. Because for me, it was always about that hour, or what I tend to like to do, 70 or 80 minutes. I always think a good stand-up show to me is like 70 or 80 minutes. Like,
yeah, I agree.
70, like obviously festivals, they require it to be 60 minutes. But if I'm out on the road and people have come out for the night and stuff like that, 70 minimum. If they're having a good time, 80. At 90, they've got to really want it to be 90, is my opinion. Like if, you know, they have got to demand that you've been there for 90.
Yeah,
if you've just stayed there for 90
and
on
that's,
your own.
And that's with your all improvised one?
Yeah, that's – well, I think just in general, that is like my good rule
same.
Of thumb.
Even if I like – even if it's like there, it's a lowly attended show, I will backstage be like, I'm really going to probably do 45. I mean, this looks like it's going to be a beating. I'll be out there an hour 10 and be like, that's amazing. You know, like you just get – I think because of COVID times, like we're out of it.
Remember the COVID times when COVID was
hilarious.
In our community?
Yeah, the only thing that changed is like the time where we like really took it seriously. I mean, we're still in COVID, but when we were all kind of taking a knee on shows and stuff, it was like that first time I was back, I was like, holy shit, the appreciation level was so high that even a bad show is still so much better than what, you know, when COVID was still happening.
Yeah.
Which it's ended,
but
thank
isn't,
God.
Oh, thank God. They were such terrible times that I'm glad they're completely over. So speaking of which, this was something we were talking about off air, but I'm going to bring it on air, which is Trump. So there is something about the way that Trump conducted himself when he was president that it was at least like he was saying terrible things, but he was very honest about the terrible things that he was saying. Whereas we now live in this world, we've adopted those same terrible things, but we've cloaked it in this mystery of no, we're not. Like when Trump said, he got ridiculed all over the world when he said, if we want less cases, we've just got to do less tests.
Yeah.
And yet that is now apparently the official policy of every country in the entire world, which is let's just dissuade people from feeling like this is a big deal and get on with things.
Yeah, we're not pregnant if we don't piss on the strip.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until we have the toilet baby that we're now living in.
But then you're like, oh, what a dump. Flush it. Nothing happened. We have like fully gotten to the point where, I mean, you know, it's always been that every president has gotten more powerful than the last one. And that was true under Obama, that was true under Trump, and that's true under Biden. But I think the carryover of the, like, version of kind of ignoring it, it's a different version because there's not a guy out there every day just kind of like, I mean, the media is also not blasting, I think, the policy nearly as much as the media was for Trump. I mean, he was a total fool and was fully ridiculous in every way and wore orange makeup and, you know, was a total clown. But this version is kind of would be the same path that I think he would have basically gotten to, which is like, you know, just fully ignore it. He would be like stepping in it more, but they're just like kind of quietly just, you know, doing things, pulling back, certain legislation and pulling back funding and all that stuff. And it is,
well, for me, it's the Tropic Thunder principle. You can't actually make this joke anymore. It was probably politically incorrect at the time, but it certainly wouldn't stand up today, which is the idea that the problem with the lead character in Tropic Thunder, he didn't get his Oscar because he had gone the full, you know, R word was there, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah, the full pirate, we'll call it. The full
pirate.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so, well done. Well
right?
done.
So he gone the full pirate, and you never go the full pirate. So Trump was the full pirate, but now it is just clown from the neck down. Like, they're not wearing the clown face out in public, but they're still doing all the clown shit at home. They've still got the squirty flower and the big shoes and stuff, but they're like, no, no, look at this. Like, we've got our makeup off. We don't have a big
clown
red nose
from
anymore.
The neck down, I mean, is pretty right on. Because it is. It's just closet clown. Mm. It's just now, it's just like whisper clown, and it's no longer like, shut up, shut the fuck up, you know, which was like so assaultive. And again, was just, it was totally displeasing. But it's, you know, it's just very similar. I mean, I think that when, you know, when I talk to my family or my mother in England, you know, they fully are like, they think I'm wearing a tinfoil hat. I mean, they're like, oh my God, this guy with coat. Like I'm deciding to like stay within it and like not, you know, choosing to just be, choosing to have it still linger. Like, it's a weird, crazy, I mean, I don't know. And you can only talk about it so much, but my mother, who has kind of come back and forth a couple times from England to the States, you know, I'm like, to try to convince her to wear a mask on the neck, because British Airways lifted masking. Mm. And, you know, I'm sure by the time she flies, unless there is some, you know, enormous shift, which I don't think there will be, her, you know, her plan is like, oh, you don't have to wear it. And I'm like, I understand. But please, like, I had to basically be like, I'll pay for your flight, so pretend you won a game show, and the thing you had to do to get that free trip to America, the game show is called Wear a Mask for 10 Hours. And you have to play it in order, and she, it was like, it was having, because she, like, has still this, like, extreme poverty mentality, it was starting to work on her, and I'm just, like, trying to beat that drum to be like, that's your prize, it's a free trip, like, it's, she loves Wheel of Fortune, so she's starting to be like, yes, I won it. And I'm like, yes, you won this. That's right. Look at the watch go back and forth, m'lady. Yes. You won a prize. But that's what we were talking about before, is like the masking on planes. It's this dude on my flight when I was flying back on Sunday, you know, he was like, the loophole of I have a drink.
Yes.
Is just quite a, it's a pretty big loophole, because
it feels like a big loophole. So for people who haven't flown, because I reckon there'd be a lot of people who haven't been on a plane since all this happened. So in Australia, I believe, at least in my experience of flying recently, it's always been compulsory to wear a mask. However, you can take off your mask to eat and drink. And so I have not been taking advantage of the take off your mask to eat and drink, because I believe that that's not fooling COVID. I believe if there's some COVID on the plane, it's not like, you know what, well, this dude like wore a mask 90%
boys,
of the time.
Boys, slut, he's eating some fish. You know the rules. It's out of bounds. Leave him be. What? Once he's done eating, we can move. Until then, this is the rules of engagement.
Imagine if they found out, let's explore this idea a little bit more, that it was indeed true. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt that COVID cannot attack you. This was their big breakthrough, right? They're like, the vaccines are working. The more people who get them, the better it's going to be. But there's variants, and it's not a perfect system, you know. It is a miracle of science and whatever. But look, we're always looking for better ways to deal with this. And we have discovered that the airline industry had it right the whole time. If you are eating or drinking, you cannot catch COVID. We don't know why particularly, but it's just absolutely true.
We think COVID might be from America because it respects eating more than any other country. If you're pounding food, it will not come at you.
I mean, I guess the fact that so many Americans have died probably disproves this theory straight away, doesn't it? Because if any country was going to be defended by constantly eating and drinking, it would be the United States.
If you're talking about the Americans' wet dream, look, we can eat ourselves out of this. They'd be like, Kathleen, back off. I'm eating to save lives. Now, Listen, hold on. Get the family. I'll hold it off at the door for as long as I possibly can. Hand me that linguine. Oh, my God. All right. Don't worry. On my way to work, I don't have to wear a mask because I'm eating the whole time. As long as your mouth is active.
What about, so are there still in America any all-you-can-eat restaurants? Like, is that still a thing that exists in America? Is there, like, chains that you can go to and get all-you-can-eat?
It has to be. I mean, it has to be. I mean, there were so many things that I thought were done that have just come back. Among them, the handshake.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. No, there's totally. There are buffets. Yep, there are buffets. Yep. Yep, buffets are totally happening here still.
Buffets are back.
Buffets are back. Yep.
If they ever went away in the first place.
But again, I mean, talk about a place that COVID is not going to go. Well, God, look, people are eating a lot in here.
Well, that's what I mean.
A rule's a rule. Yeah.
Maybe it is the safest place. That's where we should all be, in all-you-can-eat restaurants.
We've like it's like this the virtual sneeze guard. But yeah, I mean, they're handshakes, buffets, just so many different, like when I was taking lifts the other day when I was in Syracuse, you know, like you are having to kind of acquiesce to the time where it's like, yeah, they don't like it reminds me of like any time I've had sex and someone's like, you don't have to wear a condom. And that's when I'm like, I definitely am wearing a condom. After hearing that, like a Lyft driver being like, you don't have to wear a mask is like, I'm 100% wearing a mask. Knowing that you are like, hey, I'm cool with it. I'm like, oh, I'm absolutely wearing one hearing that. You know, that doesn't make me feel safer. That scares me further. You don't have to wear a condom. Like, well, exactly. If that's the policy you're working with, I'm going to probably strap up.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how... Like community, I read some really interesting research around this about how the problem with the way that we communicated around COVID is that the way that we talk about things like diseases and pandemics and vaccinations and all these things is actually very community-based. So if other members of your community think one way, you are just much more likely to think that way, right? Like you're hearing from them. You know, you get a lot of information secondhand anyway. If people are telling you it's okay, you tend to think it's okay. You see other people, you go, well, if everybody else is doing it, it must be okay. Like,
And you feel weird. Yeah.
So I live in a community where I told you I'd just gone to town before we did this and I was the only person in the entire town. Did not see another person with a mask. And so I live in their world now. They don't live in my world. I live in their world. And I have started shaking hands again. That's my, like, it's more likely to be airborne than it is like to be transmitted by hand. And when someone offers me their hand in a community where everyone's shaking hands, you just feel like a prick to be wearing the mask is one thing, but refusing to shake someone's hand feels like, and I don't know why, maybe it's just because it's been ingrained in me all my life that was a way that you greeted someone or showed them respect and it's hard to get over that. But it shouldn't be, if I'm wearing a mask, it shouldn't be unreasonable for me to not want to shake someone's hand. In fact, I would, if someone was wearing a mask, I would not offer them my hand yet. The fact that I'm wearing a mask, people fucking shoot their hand at me at all times. And I grab
because I don't want to
be rude.
How much of... Okay, I would imagine in your community that you're known, right? People know you?
Well, I am wearing a mask.
You're a tall guy with
me,
a mask, but still, I mean, you're still kind of... You're still... I mean, you've gotten to the point where I would say there, you're mask recognizable still, right? Which is quite, and that's why your fucking management should not be telling you to upload any goddamn clips to Instagram. You are mask recognizable, Will.
I mean, I am. But what I tend to find is that it's mostly if, like, people have heard my voice, right? Like, I'm not disguising my voice. What I need is, like,
That's your problem.
I need a Batman Bane-style mask.
Yes. I'll have a cappuccino, please. Right. Who's this guy?
That's what I need. Because I think...
I'm not shaking hands either. Sorry.
Yeah. Which I think would reinforce the not shaking hands thing too, to be honest. Because I think part of the reason that I do shake hands is I am mask recognizable and I don't want people to think I'm a prick.
Yes.
I think that's,
see, that's the
I
problem.
Think if I was anonymous, I wouldn't shake their hand.
You need... I mean, it's also great for you because of how much you love Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
You need the Bane mask.
I mean,
I'd
love one that had a Batman and a Bane setting. you know, that's situational, you know?
And a Joker and a Riddler. Will, would you take the Riddler one off? It's so fun. Oh, okay. I'm not shaking hands. But my thing with the handshake is, like, there were things that I was not cool with prior to COVID. I would, like, if I were on a plane, I started wearing masks on planes pre-COVID because the amount of times where I would just be like, yeah, I got sick from the flight. I would sit next to someone who looked like they were in outbreak, and 2 days later, I would be dying, and I'd be, like, doing a gig, like, feeling like shit. And then the handshake, too, was always, like, it just felt like a natural move away from the handshake. I mean, people were even talking about, like, we're done with the handshake. The handshake's done. And then we came back, and people are still... So I now, because I'm not mask recognizable, and I have the Bane one just in case, I go from the, I do this now, and I try to establish it, but I do get broken down from fist bump to eventually... And actually, it's resulted in a couple times where I've denied a handshake to two or three people, and then my will has broken, and then I'll shake a hand in front of them and be like, I just look like... I hate them, and I'm just crazy, and I can't stick to my goddamn guns.
I know, right? Because then you are a contradiction. Like, yes, then, and then you're like, yeah, I get it. We're all complicated. This is hard.
You're like, I'm trying. Really, you guys have broken me down. Yeah, it's like, there's only so many times you could, like, I can only turn down a joint so many times before I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, I've avoided any situation where that would come up at the moment. So, because, again, I don't know if it's what I would do in that situation. But the idea of passing somebody...
I'm not smoking weed right now.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to buy that, so... I'm Batman. Oh, it was Batman. It's fine. Where's Will, though?
I, in Hawaii, my probably third or fourth gig back was in Hawaii. And at that time... You had to be negative tested. You had to be vaccinated when the vaccines were still, like, a pretty airtight way. I shared a joint, and that was it. But since then, I've had a lot of people want to share joints or want to take a hit off my one hitter, you know, and I'm like, man, no. We're not there yet. I'm not there. Like, that is not – I'm certainly not going to get COVID from giving someone weed.
Right. I mean, I'm surely – COVID respects that. If it respects food drink, then come on.
I hope. It's a wily beast. If you don't, when you got to find out which variant. This new variant will get you if you're smoking weed. I'd be like, oh my God.
Did you see that news story about the fact that, well, the fact, yes. Fact is very, I've put that in quotation
it's a fact,
marks.
Dude. Fact.
Because they had identified, just like in testing, very basic testing, that there might have been some aspects of cannabinoids that might be helpful in the treatment of COVID. And that's even putting a bit of mayonnaise on what that actually discovered. Like, that is.
Well, it was about a week where it was like, it was just like every stoner was just like, it was like when they said, like, you know, red wine with dinner is good for you. And every alcoholic was like, well, I told you, what did I say? I'm a bit of a health nut. You know, they're like, one glass. You're like, well, two's good, too. They're like, no, it actually said two is not good. It was a week where they were just, where every stoner was just, like, even anyone I knew who gave me shit, I'd be like, well, you should probably start smoking weed. And then it was CBD, and I was like, ah, it's a shame. And it was, like, CBD only. I was like, well, that's for weirdos, so that's probably not. I'm not sure who's smoking CBD only, so. Like an undercover, like, Donnie Brasco guy is the only one who's like, hey, perfect.
Yeah,
that's all I'm smoking around these guys.
I loved in Australia because we now have the medicinal cannabis program. Thank you, which is a good thing. And when you obviously are getting your prescription from your doctor, you know, he's talking you through all the various options that you have. And he's like, well, you know, obviously you can have this thing that is like, you know, the CBD, but it doesn't have the THC. And I was like, he was like, I said, what's the advantage of that one? Because I thought, you know, I should ask the right questions. I said, what's the advantage of that one? He goes, well, some people like it because they don't like to feel high. And I said, is there any other advantages of that one? And he was like, there are no other advantages of that one. And I was like, let's consider that to be no advantages of that one.
Sir, I'm going to take this mask down and show you who I am for a second. I'm Will Anderson, so you can just kind of jump to the end of this one. That's amazing. The doctor was probably like, I legally have to point this one out. There's no other reason. So for people who are trying to trick friends that they're high, that's pretty much it.
I get that. I mean, obviously, the medicinal aspects, there are people who don't want to feel high. I get that. But I just don't quite understand that myself.
Well, you know, I have taken a weed break a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And a couple times I have... I'm making fun of the person I have been a couple times. My buddy got me these joints, and this is so embarrassing. Especially to tell you this. It's called Dad Grass. Uh-huh. And it is CBD joints. And a couple times, it's like the saddest.
Sad,
it's like
grass. That's what it is.
Sad grass. It's way more accurate. It's one of those ones where when you get the spam emails, you immediately like unsubscribe. I don't want this. I want no record of this being in my life in any way. And sad grass is exactly what it is. It causes weeping. And alienation of your former friends. But I literally feel nothing. Like, my buddy, when he told me about it, he was like, it's kind of a body high. And then I was like, this is like, it's like giving like a crushed up Altoid to a Cokehead. Yeah. It's like, dude, there is no crossover effect here that I'm noticing any similarity at all. And I have like a pack of them, and I've probably had two of them, and at any time I'm just like, I'm not a man. This is sad grass. I'm not a dad.
I haven't been drinking alcohol, so I went the other way. I decided that
mocktails.
I decided that alcohol was the one that I was going to. So it's been a year nearly since I've had a drink.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
crazy.
Yeah. I leaned into microdosing mushrooms for a little while just to get through some of the hard times.
Which is great. Let me ask you about that after, because I have some great microdose ideas and stories.
I decided, you know what, I'm going to get that out of my life. And so for the first...
For good? You feel like you're done for good?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean,
a year's enough time where it's like, it almost feels like it's more strange to go back than to not at this point.
Well, just because I don't miss it at all.
Yeah.
Like, that's more what it is. It's not, if there gets to a point where I miss it or some sort of situation where I feel like, oh, it'd be fun tonight to have a drink, I would be fine with that, I think. And I think I'd probably be like, it wouldn't be like one of those just like I have a drink and then suddenly I'm drinking all the time again. I think that I have seen the appeal of not drinking, and now I've done the hardest bit of it, which I can say now that I've done it. I didn't really want to talk about it too much before I did it, which was I don't think that I had done a show completely sober for a decade, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I was worried that maybe – it just wouldn't feel the same, or I wouldn't like be able to do
it's
it
Dumbo's
without.
Feather.
And so over the years, I'd probably done it once or twice, and you know, always at the wrong times, in the middle of a festival or a run or whatever. And then of course it didn't feel good. And I went back to drinking. Whereas I've had 8 months off performing. So I don't have anything to like, it's not like I've done a run of gigs drinking. I haven't done gigs for ages. It's going to feel weird and awkward when I start again anyway. So maybe see if you can do the shows without drinking. And I was really like, now that I've done them, I can say this, like I was really nervous about it because what if what I discovered was that I couldn't? Like, what if I discovered that I actually just couldn't do it without having a drink or two? Like, that...
That would be a problem.
Yeah, that would be a problem, right?
That would be a problem. Yeah.
Like, I've discovered that most of my alcohol... Like, I have such a weird alcohol story because I only ever really drink at work. Like, I don't drink at home. And so all this time that I've been home not working, I just didn't feel any... like pull or appeal to drink. And so drinking just kind of went away. So the only thing I was worried about, like what a weird thing to have to say out loud, but the only thing I was worried about was that when I went back to work, I would start drinking again because I like to drink at work.
But I really get that because I mean, when I think about my relationship with booze and stand up, you know, they do become intertwined, partially because you are in a place where not only is everyone drinking, but it's like, it's just, it couldn't be easier for you to get a drink. And so you do.
Oh, like, yeah, you get free drinks. Like, I mean, that's
free drinks.
Free drinks.
And if I remember one time I was not drinking, I was like, I was doing a cleanse before an ayahuasca thing. I live in Los Angeles. And the manager of the club, she was like, I heard you like to party. And I was like, you're catching me. Like, so people know you to some extent and, you know, expect it of you. But I went from being like, I'd perform well with a couple shots to I'm not going to drink before I go on stage. I'll drink while I'm on stage to I'm not going to drink on stage. And it is weird. It's also, but once you get away from it, you're like, it's weird to think that I perform better with inebriation. I mean, it is strange because in the environment, especially if you're doing improvised shows or like how probably either of us do shows where, you know, you're very open to riffing and stuff. Like, it is helpful to have that step, extra step where you're not, you know, behind, slowed.
Well, the interesting thing to me has been, so the one that I was worried about the most was the improv shows, because
right.
I really felt like, will my brain just go where I need my brain to go? But
that would be a good title. Will my brain go where
I need my brain to go? I mean, it's like,
yeah,
it's going to cost me a lot to fit that on a fucking tram. I'm going to have two trams.
I mean, you save that booze money, so you may as well throw it towards something.
But I do think part of it is that there is an appeal of free alcohol that because so often in your life, the idea that you would get to have free alcohol was such an appealing idea in those formative parts of your life, that still to today, when you can afford alcohol, you can buy alcohol whenever you wanted to buy alcohol. Like, there's still something about a free drink that is very hard to walk past.
It's so true. It's also like in green rooms, they'll have like granola bars and I'll still be like, I need five of these.
Yeah.
Just in case. Like, I don't know what the prep is. I mean, you know, whatever the angle is. But yeah. And when you, like, when you're saying you don't drink at home, like, I'm like that. I don't drink at home. I mean, I do sometimes, but very rarely. But if I go on the road, I'd be like, oh, this is like my weekend. Like, so I would drink way more, come back, not drink, prep myself for the Thursday where I'd be like, oh, I'm done at like 10:15 tonight. Like, oh, I can get hammered.
I mean, America was bad for me for that, because I'm touring, like, basically I'm on this backpackers tour around America where, like, I get to go to a city for a week and this is my life. My life is that for 1 hour a night, I go out to a comedy club where they give me free alcohol and free food. I tell some jokes to some strangers who fucking love it. They love that I'm drinking because I'm Australian. And like, I feel like I'd be letting down my country if I wasn't like drinking excessively. Like, they're having a great time. I'm having a great time. And I've got fuck all to do the next morning. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have anyone.
I know.
Like, there's no excuse not to do that almost.
It really does fuck you here. I mean, the way it is like, it's the weekend. It's free. The environment is stoked for it. And again, you're in a foreign city, and it's not that it's Saturday. It's Saturday in Columbus, Ohio. You have fucking not. You don't know anything. All you have to do is eat twice. That is all you have to do that day, and that is very easy to figure out. And you can do it hungover really well.
Right. Sometimes it helps. Like sometimes.
Yeah.
You
sometimes
look forward
your
to
egg
that.
Your egg dar's up. You're like, there are eggs closed.
Yeah.
This place has eggs.
I remember in Alaska, like hungover, like I've never been hungover, because I was at playing this club where they still smoke inside, you know, it's like, it's old school. Yeah. And so I haven't smoked a straight cigarette for, you know, a very, very long time. And, but I'm in this bar and everyone's smoking. So I'm like, bring me a cigarette. They're like getting me a shot every 10 minutes. Like every 10 minutes in my set, they send another shot to stage. I'm like doing it, whatever. Like feel terrible. Hike through the snow for like 30 minutes the next morning to have this like American, like, you know, stack of pancakes, stack of everything, stack of toast, stack of like whatever, stack of eggs. You know,
COVID's not getting you. Yeah.
Breakfast. That.
Yeah.
I remember that being one of the best meals that I've ever had in my life, because that combination of just like being the right amount of hungover, and it was like medicine, right? It felt like it was rebuilding you, making you stronger, only because you'd broken yourself in the first place. But There's something about that that, oh, now I'm talking myself back into drinking. I'm hearing it. It's all rushing back.
What if you just poured a drink right now? Well, I think it's partially because you sort of set yourself up for like a grandpappy's tale. It was like you had the medicine, then you walked miles in the snow to get a stack of flapjacks. I mean, that's basically what grandparents always told their kids. So you were like, you'd earned it. Even though you'd done nothing, you were like, oh, these flapjacks were earned.
Right. Well, I had nothing else to do either that day, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that was my thing that I was doing. I was going to get myself breakfast.
The Friday, Saturday, it is bonkers. I mean, I'm going to have it this weekend where, you don't have shit to do. And it's just hiking and getting a meal. And it is conducive. It is just conducive to drinking. I think you do kind of, I mean, you can go one of two ways. You can either be someone who, like, you know, that kind of is baked into what you do, or you eventually are like, I need to have a professional relationship with it because, you know, you are technically working. But I mean, in a way, like that was a thing that COVID year was helpful for, was it was kind of like, it was the healthiest I've been in a long time. I was still drinking. I mean, I like weekends, I still treated like weekends. Even though I was living in Idaho. I was living in the middle of fucking nowhere. I had like one friend living with me. She did not drink.
Can we just talk about that for a second? So
sure.
Now that we can,
it was quite a weird year.
Now that I'm on record, we can talk about the fact that you were living in Idaho in this great,
in the middle of fucking nowhere.
In this, but what I want to talk about is, the inability for anyone to keep that a secret. You were trying your best.
Oh my god! Oh, dude, I forgot that. Oh my god, when we did the Josh Earl thing,
yes.
Dude, I was just trying to keep a lid on it because, you know, it was one of those things that where I wasn't going to say anything, and then I rented a U-Haul to move there. And I had the worst experience possible with a U-Haul. And I was just trying to get my money back because I was furious. Long story short is, you know, I was like, I'd ordered this U-Haul and I could not have checked more. I called their, you know, it's a big moving truck. I don't know if you have U-Hauls there, but it's a big moving company. And I was in LA. And so I call and I couldn't have, like, so on the, whatever, on the 19th, I have the moving, yeah, you got the moving truck. Okay, and I pick it up from here. Yeah, well, you're going to pick up the trailer from here. You pick up the move. Okay, great. That day I go and I'm like looking for this big U-Haul lot. I'm not seeing it. It's like an alley. And I'm sort of like, the fuck is going on? And then some dude 15 minutes late, he's like, sorry. And as he's checking me out, he goes, oh, wait, you need this to go out of state? And I was like, man, I have checked with your company 15 times. And he's like, this one can't go out of state. And I'm like, I like how you're putting that. Like, it's something I'm going to have to fix. You work for me right now. What the fuck?
But can I just say this, by the way? Why is that even a thing? Why is, when you're a moving company, do you even have trucks that can't go out of the state? Like, that seems to me to be one of the...
It's crazy.
Least useful things you could have in your armory.
There is not a company that needs to be undercover bossed more than U-Haul. The amount of things I figured out about U-Haul in 30 hours was remarkable. I mean, it was basically like I was reading America's Book of Secrets. It was just like, I was like, this is a North Korean storefront business. There is no food in this store. It is pictures of food to make you feel like there's a grocer. There's no food. Unless you're going to eat cardboard, there's nothing edible in here. And not to mention that they, like, outsource their name, like, and let random people be like, I'm U-Haul. And you're like, what?
Hang
no,
on,
you're
what?
Just a guy. Yeah. Well, that's what it was. It was just some dude who'd, like, bought a U-Haul. So he had two U-Hauls, and he was like, I'm basically a U-Haul. That's why I was in an alley, like, what did my map, what did my directions get me into? And that's why he looked at me like, sir, you're fucked. And I was like, buddy, I'm the customer. I'm right. He's like, I'm basically a customer too. I just have two U-Hauls. But so then I go to a mechanic shop. I mean, I have movers coming and everything. So I go to a mechanic shop and they, I mean, like I'm Clark Griswold, they pull out the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang U-Haul. And I'm just like, this doesn't look good. And I just said to the guy, I'm like, this will make it for a 20-hour drive. And the guy's like, this will make it for a long drive, man. You're fine. I was like, okay. As I'm driving it, I'm going, man, this thing is really like, it's a beast. The sound coming in the cab, the roll down windows, all these things that I was like, you know, this is not modern in any way. But I load up and I'm driving it. It's one of the hottest days of the summer. And I'm driving it like through Nevada. It's 110 degrees. And I'm towing my car. And as I'm driving, I felt like Clark Griswold. A guy pulls up next to me. He's honking. And he just goes, your truck's on fire. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Pull off. Sure enough, the bottom of the truck was smoking because this guy like saved my life. I have Jose drugged in the front. I got him like a sleeping pill. My friend picked him up at one point and his jaw like dropped. Like he looked dead.
For anyone who doesn't know, Jose's your cat. We should point that out just in case there's a casual listener.
He's my valet.
Tuned in for the first time. Like you just, we should.
I drugged Jose, who's a close friend of mine, but terrified of road trips. He's a human man. No, it was my cat. Yes.
Gareth's got a real Bill Cosby thing going on. He feels like there's a opening in the market.
The idea. Oh man, it's almost great if someone had no clue who Jose was. It's a crazy story, this guy's. The crazy part of this story is not that his truck kind of, he's drugging a man.
Yeah, he skipped over that. Where's
so I
this
drugged
guy?
My friend. I drugged this man. I drugged this grown man.
Yeah.
And anyway, it was just they tell me I have to call a tow truck company, third party. I have to get movers to repack it. It's just a total nightmare. The movers were all methy. They damaged tons of my shit. I got a different truck to Idaho, and then I call U-Haul, and I'm just trying to get my money back. And they are like, I tell the woman on the phone, she's like, this is the craziest story I've ever heard. I was like, oh, that's good. But then they wouldn't do it. And eventually, I'm talking to someone. I'm going, look, I'm going to be an asshole, and I'm going to blow you up on Twitter about this. And I hear nothing back for 2 days. So then I just write a long thread about my nightmare experience with U-Haul. And in it, part of the thing I had to say was it was an out-of-state move because of that first part of the story where the guy's like, you can't leave. So in order to fully indict them, I did that. So that's when people are like, where'd you move? Where are you going out of state? All this shit. And that's when I was like, I don't want people to know. So I was trying to, yes, keep a lid on moving to Idaho. Yes.
And we did. Josh Earle's podcast, Don't You Know Who I Am? It's an excellent podcast. If people have never heard it, I would highly recommend you have a listen to that.
Fantastic show.
So we were both guests on that show. And it was a Zoom. It was a Zoom call, wasn't it? It was like a Zoom show.
It was a Zoom. And he's it is a very organized, prepared show. Yes. So he is, you know, he's got a lot to do. So we're just kind of bullshitting in the quote unquote backstage while he's doing stuff. And one of the things
that's
we were
right. It was going to, it was a one that people were going to see, wasn't it? Like it was,
yes, it was live, I think.
Yeah. It might've been like a live show or like a special show. And so we're all in the literal sort of waiting room together, just chit chatting. And Josh, because he's like coordinating this thing, I think he was maybe even in a studio or whatever. And so he's got a whole bunch of different things going on. Like Josh not only writes all the questions, researches the entire show, like it's really a fantastic show.
Yes.
So you're talking about, yes, the experiences that you've had and where you're living, but you've made it very clear. Like you actually say out loud, but please let's not talk about that publicly. Like that's what you say. But at that moment, it turns out we discover very soon that Josh must have been distracted by something else.
Josh... Well, half distracted because he heard I'd moved to Idaho, but he didn't hear, but I don't want anyone to know about this or something like that. And so it was probably the first thing he said when he introduced me. He was just like, and Gareth, I understand you've moved to Idaho. And I was just like, your face was like it is right now. You were just like, oh my God. And like kind of giggling. And I don't even know what I said. I mean, I was just like, nah, I didn't. Something like that. And then there was a long pause.
You went, nah. And then I can't remember what I jumped in with, but I saw a friend in need and I thought, I am a friend in need.
A man drowning.
Because it honestly, the way that it played out was basically Josh must have been getting ready just to start the show, because in my memory, the way that it happened was, I've moved to Idaho, but I don't want like anybody to hear about that. Hey, welcome to the show. Hey, Gareth, you've moved to Idaho. And yeah, to me, yeah, it was like, yeah. Like, if I didn't know he was such a nice guy, you would have thought, oh my God, what a absolutely yeah. jagged way to start a show.
Well, and then I think you said something, and then I think he was like, oh, maybe I wasn't supposed to say something or something like that. And I was just like, And then, I mean, it really was remarkable. But that sort of thing happened a couple times. That was by far the most egregious and the one where I was like, I have no clue how to handle it. Because it was live, and we both just sort of sat there like, okay, great, great. But there were multiple times where I would do shows and be like, I don't want to say that. And then someone else would be like, Idaho. I'd be like, no, I'm really... cut that out. I'd have to be that person. No, and you seem psychotic. Yeah. But yes. So yes, I lived in Idaho and tried to keep it off the record in the middle of fucking nowhere. And it was. And one time I ordered food from the farmer's market and I'm just like, whatever, I can put the... And this girl messaged me and she's like, there was an order at the farmer's market for Gareth Reynolds. Did you move to Idaho? And I was like, Jesus Christ, I can't even order from the farmer's market.
What was Idaho like? I don't really know much about Idaho. Like, what was your life like in Idaho?
I did not know much about it either. And when I got there, I was like, boy, I really should have Googled this a little more.
Oh, really?
Extremely rigid.
That wasn't the first thing that you checked?
I moved, yes, real bad.
Honestly... the first thing that I would have checked. Like, I would have been like, I'm not going there.
Well, you, listen, I was not smart. And I just basically was just like, it was so cheap to rent a house. I knew shit was going to hit the fan. So I was just like, I'm going to rent a big house. And that was all I thought. And then I was like, it'll be fine. And then, yes, when I got there, I was like, what are the weed laws? I knew it wasn't legal, but it's like these strict, I think the strictest weed laws in America. Oh, and I moved to this little community in the middle of nowhere, and they were just it's much more right wing than California, no doubt. Thus the weed laws, but it was also just even wherever you were politically, they just were like different than I am. I was just like, hey, whatever, you know what I mean? Water your lawn when you get a second, whatever, you know, they were like, your lawn looks a little spotty. And I'd just be like, yeah, so, okay. They didn't like that I was from California, because there's a lot of that in this country where they're like, they do not like Californians moving there. It was quite an undertaking for whatever I was going for, which was just space, which was what I got. But every other part of it was pretty fucking crazy. I mean...
Okay, so, yeah, I'm interested in their reaction to you. So how much of you did they see? Like, because when you say small town in Idaho, like, the only picture I have in my head, and I know this was like Alaska or whatever, but I'm getting a real Northern Exposure vibe. I'm getting a real sort of, like, you're the big city doctor who's landed himself in, like, this rural community. How did you introduce yourself to the community? Like, did much? Or, like, did you keep a low profile?
Well, I kept an extremely low profile. I lived just outside of Boise, which is a major city. Mm. But where I lived was, you know, on the way to farm town. So it was kind of like that a little bit. I moved in. And the first night that I moved in, this woman came up to me. This woman knocked on my door, my neighbor, and she...
Your lawn's looking a bit spotty.
I'm not loving your lawn so far, sir. Have you watered it since you unpacked? I know you're still moving, but your lawn is not looking... By the way, your friend Jose looks like he's really... Is he on a narcotic? He is passed out on your lawn, and he's a grown-ass man. First of all, she goes... did Tim move? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like,
you don't have to say, I don't know. I would say yes.
I would assume he's not here. I mean, there's been a lot of, if he is, it's going to be a pretty tough week. I don't know. I don't know who.
Well, by the way, what would you have done? If it turned out You got that.
Like, are you cool with weed smoking? Then you could stay, Timmy. You rat me out, that's going to be a problem. I'm not smoking no dad grass. I don't give a fuck. I'd have just drugged him. Put him in the Jose closet. There you go. I'm stacking men. And so yeah. I was like, yeah, I'll go. What were you going to say?
No. So she's come over and she's like, yep. Okay. So where's Tim?
I said, I don't know. She goes, I wonder if he left. Mm. Oh, he was so great. Mm. Really effusive about Tim. Then she explains what an easement is. Mm. Which I still don't think I really know. But
okay. Give us your best go at what an easement is.
Easement is a shared part of the yard betwixt our homes where it's a gray area. It's a shared territory where where her property line ends somewhere and my property line ends somewhere, and then we have an easement, which is where we're both sort of a little... You know, it's kind of like the three-way. It's like we're whatever happens there happens. So she's going on about the easement, and I'm going, lady, I'm high, but I can't tell you. I don't really have time to figure out what the fucking easement is. You know, she's like, well, I put some of my plants are in the easement, but I'm allowed to do that. And I'm going, ma'am, I don't give a fuck. You know, I don't know what Tim's rigid policy was, but you know, whatever.
I mean, you've told me that Tim was a great guy, but it feels like he was pretty anal about the easement.
Kind of an easement prick.
That's what I'm hearing.
Feels like he's a bit of an easement Nazi, if I'm being honest. I don't think it was an easement, honestly, with Tim. It was a difficultment.
Yeah.
And then two other couples that night came over, and they were like, did Tim go? And I was like, yeah, he's gone. Oh, my God. Did him and Karen break up? I was like, they didn't leave a tape or anything. So I knew.
Was it over the easement? Was it an easement issue?
He was furious about the easement. He was the best guy I've ever met, but do not cross that easement. That is when he would lose his goddamn shit. He killed Jose over the easement. Did you know that? He drugged and killed Jose over the easement. But yes, it was automatically setting me up to be like, I am going to be such a letdown from the previous tenant who seems to have formed great relationships. Mm. And here I was just.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yes.
You're already behind the game. Like, there's a Tim-shaped hole in the neighborhood. Karen, they don't seem as fond of, to be honest. I reckon they're hoping that Tim's broken up with Karen.
She was the gateway to Tim. That's all she was. She was the bridge to Timothy. She
was
the easement.
Maybe. You know what? Maybe Karen was anal about the easement. Maybe
I think you're right.
Right?
The more
that was always Karen's issue. That's what we're hearing.
You know, she poisoned him on the easement.
Yeah.
he was fine about it until she moved in. She became a real asshole about the easement. She wouldn't let Grace plant her stuff there. Unbelievable. She changed Tim. Can we come in? Smells like weird sage. Can we come in? Did you light sage? Can we come in? Can't be weed. You go to jail for 5 years here. Can we come in and talk about Tim? Yeah, and then I continued to let them down constantly. And then I started just smoking weed in my closet. Because, again, I was renting a place. So I was like, well, they could come over at any time. Weed does not help your paranoia about weed smell. So I was like, I'm just going to smoke weed in this closet here where I kept the men's bodies.
So hang on, you literally went into your closet.
I went into high schooler mentality. And I had all my weed, I brought a lot of weed, and I had it all in like enormous Tupperware.
Like the amount of weed that if they found that amount of weed, you'd be in a lot of trouble.
Well, when the U-Haul caught fire, one of the first things I thought was...
I'm going to... dump this weed.
If the weed, I was almost like, look, either we put this fire out or we let it burn there's no in between where we're putting stuff out and moving boxes and then we're doing a weed count I had pounds of weed and you know, I was like, oh my God, this could be so fucking bad. when I finally got it all there, I was like, oh. I mean, I really felt like I had done some locked up abroad shit. And then I kind of had like the Brewster's Million stash of weed where I was like, this is my weed for the year. And my eyes were bigger than my lungs. Let's just say that. Cause it was like, I was bong ripping. I got into the bong again and I just had my pot closet. And then, you know, there were a couple times where it was like, James needs to come by and just count the light bulb, you know, something like that. I'd be like, Jesus Christ, all week. I'd be like, all right, so we got to put the weed in the car. We got to keep all the windows open, even though it's 4 degrees out, you know, just a pot smoker's like you that week. You couldn't have a comfortable high smoking weed in the garage, blowing through towels again. Just really, really back to the basics. Really back to the basics.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And apparently there's a website called Google where you can find out a lot of this stuff before you make a move.
But also there's like whole states that have like plenty of places in the middle of nowhere that also have like legal weed.
It was so cheap though. It was
cheaper
than my...
I'm hearing the reasons why it was so cheap.
It turns out there's a downside to that contract you're signing. It's in the fine print.
How else did you let people in the neighborhood down?
Well, my lawn, at one point there was a problem with my sprinklers on my lawn and I just didn't really notice or give a shit. Like the sprinklers were automatic. So the lawn started to have dead patches and they were, it was, you know, the woman was calling from the head office basically. And she's going, you know, people are not happy. People are really upset about the lawn. And I'm going, well, there's these sprinklers. Then just stuff that, I mean, I'd never had a house. I'd never moved into a house before. So then also, you know, well, I know your fence ends there, but all that debris outside of there, that's on you. You have to clean that debris. And I'm going, well, what the fuck? I have to clean that debris up. And then the lawn was going through some real shit. And people, it's amazing the amount of grass that I'm smoking inside and yet the amount dying out front. It was really quite a little fate twist. And
I mean, I feel like that was in protest, in solidarity. Yeah. Like that lawn had never seen somebody like, they're like, dude, like literally he's like taking us that closet must have felt like some sort of impending place of death and doom to them.
If my life was a Seinfeld episode, I would have started to throw nugs of weed over the dead patches on the grass out front and just been like, what are you talking about? It's grass. And then it would be like, bow, 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 bow. But also my California plates were, I had to change that. I had to change my license. I'm not like a social butterfly when it comes to where I live. I'm not like it, you know, you live in a small town. People know you. This was a small little community. Nobody fucking saw me. I mean, I was pretty much until I got vaccinated. Then there was one bar that I could walk to. And then I would start going to that bar like once a week. But outside of that, I was just a fucking ghost. And my friend who would live with me would be like she would just like, you know, she would go on a walk or something and she'd be like, oh, I met this great guy or I met this woman. And I'd be like, don't talk to those people. They're after my weed. They think I'm smoking weed. But yeah, I mean, I my garage was full of boxes. Anytime I would like open my garage, I would like close it right away because it was like kind of trashy. And I'd be like, they can't see my filth. You know,
did you ever reveal to any of them that you did a podcast?
No, because because of, well, this is what's also so fucking crazy, because of the right leaning tendencies. But even if they were left leaning, it's an Idaho left, which is like a soft left. So, you know, I mean, Dave and I will tee off on shit on that show where it's just like they can't know any of that. But so I didn't want them to know I was involved in entertainment. I mean, I think even when the woman came forward and she was having the easement conversation with me, I think she asked what I did and I said I was a writer. I mean, the guy who cut my hair, I told him that I was an author because I went there so early and I said I was a writer. He's like, what kind of writer? And then I was like, Jesus, you can't say like TV. So I was just like, books. He's like, what books about? And then I was like, fiction. You know, and then I was like, man, how long you been in business, sir? And he was like, wait, let's talk. I was like, no, what's that blue water? What is that blue water? Tell me for my next book. But yeah, I mean, so I started doing, speaking of improvised shows, I started doing like a weekly improvised show from that house. And it just, as I was doing it, just because I was not performing in any way, so I would just get these suggestions. And then I just started, I started talking to this guy who kind of became my editor, and he would be like telling me how to make it look better. So eventually I had like a curtain, I had like three lights, I had two cameras. So once a week, I would be setting up equipment, and I would be like closing blinds, like they can't know about my, like they were probably like, he makes porn.
Right.
Because they just saw like lights going on. And then, you know, for a couple hours, and then stuff was getting broken down after a lot of screaming that was kind of inaudible. And so I was trying to hide it, but I think to some extent they probably were like, those lights are going up again, Barbara. The hell's he doing?
What, was there anyone disappointed when you left?
Absolutely not. I left like a thief in the night. There was no goodbye. There was no any. I'm sure they were happy to see me packing up. Like I packed up like in one day to head back to California. And I'm sure they were like, I'm sure they got another person in there who, I bet you it changed how they introduced people into the neighborhood. I bet you there was a little more vetting that was going on because of me, because of my lawn, because I was California. I bet you they were a lot more careful about the next. They didn't have another Gareth. They probably had closer to another Tim.
Okay, so do you think there was a similar first night conversation? Do you think on the first night someone paid a visit and it was like, firstly, here are the rules of the easement. Like, I got to be honest with you, Tim was a bit of a Nazi. Well, it was mostly Karen. There was no appeasing Karen when
him.
It came to the,
she changed
the easement, right? Tim was cool with the easement. Then Karen came along. No appeasement on the easement for Karen. But they were nothing. Like, we'd love a Karen compared to what we had afterwards, a Gareth.
I guarantee you it was the bizarro Tim conversation where they were like,
yeah.
Oh, so he is gone? Oh, thank God. His name was Garth or Garrett, and he was a nightmare. You know, we think he was smoking weed and blowing it out of that closet window. Yeah. We're not sure. But his lawn died. He was definitely making porn. He killed a guy. He brought a dead guy into the house the day he moved in. He was in there making porn. He had a pot closet. And he hated his lawn. So all I want to let you know is we just want, and that person was probably like, oh, this is fucking great. I'm going to be the most charming neighbor these people have ever come into contact with after this last asshole who left at like 5 a.m. without a goodbye. Yeah. Yes. It's a very good point. And I almost thought about staying another year because I was like, I don't know what it's going to look like. And I didn't. I moved back to L.A. and it was like, but it was, there were a number of things influencing my decision. One was my brother lives in L.A. The other was weed. And the other was, I was like, there's a palpable hatred that I feel from, you know, it was like one of the neighbors, like whatever, Doug or whatever, you know, I'd pull in and eventually, hey, Doug. And I'd be like, he saw me, didn't nod. All right, good to know. No more Doug nods. Like, it was like that level of like, okie dokie, I am a pariah in this hood. Wearing the mask for a little too long, you know? He's wearing the mask outside again. Well, he's probably coughing because of his pot closet. You know, he probably gave the lawn COVID. I've heard of lawn COVID, but he has lawn COVID. God, he is Tim's antithesis.
Oh, it's so good that COVID's over. So you're coming to Australia, as I mentioned, yes, at the top of the podcast, to do both The Dollop, yes, your podcast that you do with Dave Anthony, and you're going to tour that all over Australia. Are you doing New Zealand as well, or just Australia?
No, I think just Australia. It was too precarious to sketch. It's been fairly difficult to you know, we've had to shift around the Australian schedule a little bit. So yeah, we wanted to, and then I wanted to do some gigs in New Zealand as well, but yeah, not this time, unfortunately.
So where are you doing your own gigs though?
I'm all over. I mean, pretty much everywhere where we're doing dollops. I am, this is where I will say something funny so I can go to my website.
So I'm doing shows as well. I'm going to Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Willogical on sale now. If you want to see a man try to cram 2.5 years worth of thoughts into 60 minutes.
Sober. Non-drunk, yeah.
This will be, soberish. Yeah. Not drunk.
Drunk. where are you going to? Well, I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you.
No, that's all good. That's fine.
Well, I'm going to be in Fullarton. Now, that's Perth, right?
Yep.
Okay. I should probably change saying instead of sounding like my father trying to say Fullerton. I'll be in Melbourne. So I'll be in Fullerton the 21st of April, Melbourne the 22nd, Melbourne the 23rd, Prospect, which is actually Adelaide, right?
Yep.
May 4th, Brisbane May 5th, May 6th in Sydney, and then May 8th in Canberra is for my stand-up. And then the dollop, basically May, we'll be all over. Basically the same cities, Adelaide, Perth, dollopodcast.com. My website's GarethReynolds.com. But yeah, I mean, I figured just while we were going, you know, why not just do stand up with the time there too?
So let's talk about stand up to finish. Oh, by the way, when people hear this, I will have one night of my improvised What You're Talking About Will show at the Brunswick Picture House, which is for flood relief for the Northern Rivers. So if you're in that part of the world, and on the Monday night, I'll be doing a benefit gig at Twin Towns on the Gold Coast. Twin Towns. People know where Twin Towns is. With Tom Gleason, Kitty Flanagan, Mandy Nolan, and Alan Briggs, which is also a flood relief gig, as well as my gigs that I'm doing all over the country. So talk to me about stand-up. How are you feeling about stand-up? Like, what's it been like to be back doing stand-up? Like, what are the audiences like? What's the reaction like? What are you talking about? Are you talking about COVID? Are you not talking about COVID?
Well, when I first started going back out, I was talking about COVID. I mean, I just started building material, not even with any real intention around COVID, just because it was so what was happening. I mean, it was like clubs had just started opening, people were out again. There was a big vaccine issue, which thankfully we put to bed. But, you know, seemed like there was a lot to talk about. It felt like it was just very of the time. And I probably did COVID material for probably like 3 months. And then I just pretty much cut it out and just started going, not really any direct jokes about COVID, certainly not anything scripted about COVID. Audiences, I mean, like, it went from feeling super safe on stage for me to, you know, being more freaked out. Like, I'm certainly the way that it's kind of just up and down. Like, I canceled some gigs because Omicron was surging, and then kept gigs. But yeah, I mean, I still find it really fucking weird. I love it. I mean, when you're out there doing it, I mean, I've found that at other times where, like, you know, you've had some tough stuff going on, you know, it's not like your mind is preoccupied on stage with what's going on off stage. It clicks in when you walk off stage. But when you're on stage, you really are. It's something so nice about, like, actually escaping reality to some extent.
So, Barry, do you know who Barry Humphries is? Dame Edna Everidge. You ever heard of Dame Edna Everidge? The guy who plays Dame Edna Everidge, tragically, speaking of that, so he's a character actor comedian, like a legendary Australian character actor comedian.
Oh, I didn't know he was Australian. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
So, like, really, you know, Dame Edna was our sort of first huge international act, even before like Paul Hogan, you know. So, yeah.
Huge Barry, in England, too. That's why I remember.
Barry Humphries, like, legendary Australian character to the point where the award for best show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival used to be called the Barry. But I do say used to be called because it turns out for a guy who's dressed up as a woman for his act for a long time, he's got some very J.K. Rowling opinions when it comes to trans people. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, unfortunately. He's just an old man saying old man things like John Cleese is. And it's not fun, you know, because you love these people, but now they're... Anyway, whatever. The point being, he still has to this day one of the best quotes about what it's like to perform that I have ever heard. And I quote it all the time. And I'm not going to stop quoting this just because, like, you know, he's now saying some dumb things. Back when he was saying good things, he said this. He was asked by a journalist what it was like to walk out to 3,000 people and having to entertain them. And he says, I walk out on stage and all that's going through my mind is, alone at last. Wow. And it's so true. Like, because when you're in it, you are there with all those people, but you're also, like, you're alone because you get the luxury to concentrate on just you and your thoughts and processing the world and whatever. And it's your job to. Like, it's your job to not be distracted by whatever else is going on in your life and your world and the broader world. You know, you've got to do your job and be in it. And it's just, like, people, I think, who don't do stand-up think it must be thrilling. But after a while, it's not really thrilling. I don't think that's the right way to describe it. Early on, when you're learning how to do it, it's thrilling. I imagine when you're learning how to surf, you know, the first time you catch a big wave, it's thrilling. But by the time that you become a professional surfer, then catching a big wave is more peaceful. You know, you go out in the ocean and you surf and it'd be a place of peace rather than a place of thrills. Like, and I think that about stand-up, that's the thing for me. I mean, I'm only 10, 12 shows back. Like after, I've basically only done 30 gigs in 3 years, you know, like it's been ridiculous how little stand-up I've done. So it all feels a bit new to me, but the thing that I'm like, how does this feel? Like I've been thinking about it every night. Like the first night I did in Adelaide, like, oh man, it was rusty. It was like a guy who had not done stand-up for a very long time. And I was like, how do I feel about tonight? And I was like, it still felt good to go out there and work on it. Like even though it wasn't always working in the way that I would have liked it to work, I was like, oh, this feels good. Like this feels like this is my car that I have in my garage that I get under the bonnet of on the weekend and try to make it work. Like whether it ends up working or not is not quite as important as the peace I get from working on it.
So true. I think that quote is so great because it is like you're saying, there is a time when you're doing performing and you are sort of saying to yourself, like, you are aware that you're performing. You're aware of what the people look like. You're aware of what the reactions are, right? You are aware of the experience that you're going through. And then when you get used to it, then it really is like, it is, you are just so much more focused on the live realm of it all, where you have a plan and you're open to doing most of your stuff, but also you are so open to the live element. If something doesn't work, you talk about it. If something, you know, crushes, you're making a mental note of, oh, great, you know, I've got to remember how that, you know, listen to the recording of how I said that. If you're talking to someone and they're crazy, you know, whatever it is. And so, I mean, that is why, like, that quote is so true, and probably why, you know, when you're doing purely improvised shows in front of a crowd, you know, you are so much more. I mean, there are times where, like, I'll have a show where I'll feel so good about it that I'll be like, I wasn't thinking. And that's probably what some of your shows feel like when you're just rolling through those improvised ones, where it is, you're just kind of trying to keep pushing the ball up the hill to some extent. And other times it's like you're dribbling it up the hill, you know?
It's funny though, because I was doing, so I did one in Adelaide a couple of weekends ago, the final night of the festival, I did my improv show, my final night of the festival. And it was funny because afterwards...
To me, that's the final night of the festival.
The official final night. The festival still went on for another 2 weeks, but I feel like...
Not in my opinion.
I closed it down. So
that's what I'm saying.
It was interesting to me because in the front row... So in those shows, I always talk, you know, to the front row, basically. If you sit in the front row, you know, you got to know that you're going to get talked to at some stage. And so there was a family in the front row, like dad, mum, daughter, son, right? That's what's in the front row. And so I start with the dad. Yeah, I talked to him for a bit. Then I talked to the mum. Then I talked to the daughter who's 17, I think. And then I talked to the son who's maybe late 15.
Yeah.
First thing about the son is that he clearly is the one who does not want to be there, right? Like, because in a group like that, not everyone in the family is sitting around going,
someone
let's go and
dragged.
See Will. Somebody's been dragged yeah. along. And that's who I'm trying to find. I'm trying to find the person right. who was dragged along, right?
Of course. That's the comedian mentality too.
And so...
who doesn't like me?
Yeah, right? That's all I want to identify. And then that's what yeah. I want to focus on. So... he has, for starters, the deepest voice and, like, just a proper, like, you know, yeah, this is me. And so I joke about that. And I literally say on stage, I'm like, have your parents brought you to this just to hear a high-pitched man's voice and go, if you could just somewhere in between yours and this guy's voice, that'd be, like, a really good voice. Because what you want to do in that situation, particularly with a kid, like, is... like, you can have some fun with him, but you don't want him to be the butt of the jokes, right? And so all night, I am, like, playing this show out, like, where I'm, like, anytime I go to him. So I get him to initially go, rank your family in order of who wanted to come here the most or who wanted to come here the least. Because I'm making a bet in my head Great. At the time that he's going to be the one who was the least. And so essentially what I'm starting to do is problem solve on stage, which is how can I construct comedy around this where he is always the hero of the bit? This bit yeah. isn't...
he gets the... his answers are getting laughs.
Yeah, he's the one who's yeah. winning, right? The right. fact that he doesn't like me, he's the cool one. I'm the right. idiot, the old man trying to win over this like kid. He's the one who's going to yeah. win. So he ranks yeah. the family. We have some fun with that. And of course, he's the one who wanted to come here the least. And so... then I start asking him questions about like who's your favorite comedian? Like, you know what I mean? Like trying to get some frame of reference for like what it is that he, what do you like to do? Name a topic, anything you like, I'll talk about that. Like, you know, like really just trying to like make him the hero of the whole piece. Anyway, I am doing this because I can AC his face. But more importantly than that, he's sitting alongside his dad and his mum and his sister, right? Like, I have got this full amount of information from their faces about when I'm getting close to any lines or when I'm just like they're enjoying it and it's all fun and it's all good. And so like I'm really just like it's great because you feel like really in tune with them, right? Because you just are so yeah. conscious about like going, is this cool? Is this bit good? But also I'm really enjoying the fact that like I'm crafting my comedy in a way that is counterintuitive to what I would normally do, which is like to... like, how can I make fun with him rather than make fun of him?
Yeah.
Anyway, walked off stage, was like, fuck, man. Like, I loved what I did with that tonight. Like, it's not ideal for me to have a family in the front row and a kid in the front row who doesn't want to be there. But I think that I did, like, with what I was served up tonight, I was like, fuck, man. Like, I made the best of, like, what I could possibly do. I get off yeah. stage. I make the mistake of checking Twitter. And there's somebody, like, literally the first comment is somebody going, oh, is that comedy, is it? Making fun of a young kid about how his voice is broken or something. And I was just like...
fuck's sake.
But there was a part of me in my head that it was like, well, I guess they couldn't see the kid's face. They couldn't see the family's face. You know, if you're sitting up the back, they're not getting all the information that I'm getting that this is a cool, you know, two-way interaction. Maybe they're not seeing the structure that I'm putting in place. And it was such a weird moment because I had felt so... kind of happy and satisfied, like literally did that thing of going, oh, fuck, that's my 60 minutes, so I've got to go, as opposed to, yeah. like I'd normally try to find something at the end that kind of weaves it all together and feels like the end of the yeah. show, but was so enjoying what had happened that I was like, we're out of time, I've been in this, and then just walked off stage and just went, and someone was like, that was shit, and I was like, well, not even that was shit, but like,
the thing that you were going for, yeah. the opposite yeah, of what correct. You were going for, and thinking that you were achieving.
Yeah, and it was like, yeah. am I wrong? Maybe I'm wrong.
No, the truth is, not only are you not wrong, like you're saying, there could just be some mix-up with that person's actual situation. Right. But, you know, that I always find that the people who want to give you shit talk the most. The amount of people who probably... I mean, you wouldn't keep doing that if it wasn't working. Like, I, without even seeing the show, know and believe in your radar enough to know that not only are you right, but it's working for the crowd. And it's not working in a way... because I see that sometimes where, you know, people will go, dude, you're like a 30-year-old. Why are you doing this? You know, whatever it is. And it's like, that gets laughs. But to me, that never feels right. That's just not like the right mix of how you want to do it. You want to like, I mean, at minimum, it's a conversation. It just should. And if someone is saying crazy shit, there are times where you're going to highlight the crazy shit they're going to say. But so rarely is your attempt like, I want to get comedy out of the shame you're feeling. Like, that maybe sometimes happens accidentally, but that's just kind of the nature of the beast. But for the most part, it's like, everybody eat. Let's celebrate the crazy shit. Let's talk about the crazy shit.
I mean, even like, so I had this, to just like, just to tell you the end of the story. So this is literally kind of how I finished the show, right? Is I do this thing at the end. Again, like sometimes I guess your frustration is that people, maybe the truth is that the show obviously is made up on the spot. So maybe people think that you aren't putting thought into it as well, like that you don't have some sort of like sense of what it is that you're trying to achieve. But the last thing that I do like in the show is basically go, you know, I'm having this riff with him and I'm like, you know what? I feel like this is it. I feel like I've won you over. Like I've won you over. Like, you know, this is, you know, you've seen this and, you know, from now on, you're actually going to be a fan of me. You're going to know who I am. And like, he literally looks at me and goes, nah. Like in the driest, like just immediate, like, nah. Now, here's what I could have done in that situation. No one else in the room sees that, right? No one else in the room sees that. I could do whatever I fucking want with that. But what I do is bring that to the stage. Like the final laugh, the final thing in the fucking whole bit is like him, me desperately trying to convince him that I am entertaining and him at the end still not, like having the hero line of not being, you know, the gladiator thumbs down, I saw it. You danced like no one has ever danced before in their life, trying to win my affection, and you did not. And that's what I brought to stage. Like, I loved it because I was like, to me, he might not be a fan of mine, but I bet he tells that story for a very long time. Like, I bet that he goes away, and because he was not the butt of the joke, he was the hero of the fucking story.
I think if you do enough like crowd work or improv on stage, you know, it just at first it feels right to make fun of someone because you are just drowning in an ocean looking for anything to grab onto.
Right.
But once you start actually realizing that, you know, you want to be not even positive, but you just want to like not make it a bad experience for anyone. I'm sure that, I mean, again, it is comedic. I do that all the time. If I find myself in a situation where I'm going, oh, I don't like their relationship, I'm in my 40s and live with a cat. Like, I'll right away be like, I'm more pathetic. Just so if I made you feel bad, you should not feel bad. I'm a bigger loser.
But also, I know nothing about you.
Yeah.
Like, the you I'm talking about on stage right now is an imaginary version of you. Yes. That I've just picked up.
Yes.
Like, a couple of traits of, and now I'm imagining a completely different person, and this person is having this conversation with this other person. It isn't you. It has nothing to do with you. You're not going to go home and cry about it because I don't know you.
Yeah.
And I don't want enough information about you for anything that I say about you to actually be personally hurtful. Like, I have no interest in making you feel bad about who you are, but I have an interest in taking some elements that you provide and then extrapolate them comedically and let those characters, like, you know, fight each other.
Well, I also think it's the instinct to find someone, like, you can be, I remember Roy Wood Jr. posted this picture of, you know, what's happening, and it's a picture of an audience, like, of 200 people laughing hysterically. It's just a drawing. What the comedian sees. It's one guy in the way back middle like this, not laughing. So if you see someone, you know, because you are mentally clocking multiple things, but if you see someone there not laughing, you, and I do it sometimes to my detriment, I want to know, why aren't you having a good time tonight? And what, and sometimes you will dip in and you'll win them over. Sometimes you'll dip in and you'll get some fruit out of it just because they're not into it. And other times you will go, wow, you really are not into it, you know, and you're like this, and you will kind of, your instinct will almost be to come back to, did you like that at all? I mean, it seemed like you kind of chuckled there and like almost derail yourself.
But so, but also, so this was what was so great about this kid was that he was never demonstrably bored. He just didn't want to be there, right? So he was just very, like, blunt about, because I asked him at one stage, I said, if you could name anything else that you'd rather be doing than this, what would you like to be doing? And he just went, don't know, sleeping. And I was like,
oh my
like,
God.
So then I'm like, I'm literally talking about, I'm like, mate, this is how low you rate me, that you would rather be asleep at 7:30 at night than be at this show. Like, that's not a joke at his expense. That's a joke at my expense. And it's fucking funny. It made me, like, it's funny.
It is. It is fun. I mean, because you, this is the reality is, I mean, it's just like that tweet at you. The reality is you cannot, you can win as many people as you can win and you can't win them all. I mean, there are sometimes after shows, I find it fucking hysterical when you'll be out there for whatever, an hour and a half or an hour and 10 minutes and people will walk by stoic. Like, you'll be like, they're like, because I like sell merch after shows. People will stoically walk by you and just kind of give you a head nod. And you're like, very strange that you were just in there for all of that. And I'm not saying you need to be effusive. I'm not saying you need to thank me. But I would almost rather you just not look at me than just kind of act like we know each other a little bit and we saw each other at a coffee shop. Like, it's sort of strange. So, I mean, that's just how it is. So it's like you are playing with house money where you are just like, yeah, if you don't like me, I'm okay with, I understand that that is possible. So it's not like you are offended when he says he's going to sleep. You're like, that's fucking great. The audience is laughing.
It's funny. Yes. Like, I mean, of course.
And sleep really is a great answer.
I mean, because it's like something that you'll get to do again later. And, like, I can't imagine even, like,
it's so inactive.
What I loved about it was, I bet there's not a night he's asleep at 7:30. So he's literally, I'd rather go to bed early than be at this show.
Yeah, I mean, you're like a cold to him.
Yeah.
He'd rather just sleep you off. I mean, it is, it's like, it's fairly genius in the simplicity of, I don't know, like, get drunk. Okay. That could be fun. You know, be on a date. Yes. Be out to dinner? For sure. Sleep? Really inactive. Nobody wakes up and is like, that was really fun. You're like, oh, I feel better. You're never like, oh, that was a blast. What a sleep.
Hey, thanks for doing the show, man. So everyone should listen to the podcast, of course.
And you'll be joining us for as many shows as you can.
I'm sure that I
think you're doing 3 shows.
Yeah, right? I think we're meant to be mysterious about, or can I say that?
300
shows. I'm doing 3. I believe I am doing 3. Yeah. Who knows which 3?
Or 6. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll never tell. Any of the ones you're not going to be at, you'd just rather be sleeping.
Exactly. So please, come and see shows. That would be unreal. We'd love to see you all there. So thank you very much for doing this, Gareth.
Oh, thank you. Always a pleasure.